Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 472, coming to you on Boxing Day, December 26th. We're going to preview the 2022 Cotton Bowl Classic between your 11-2 USC Trojans and the 16th-ranked American Athletic champions, the Tulane Green Wave. We're going to discuss all the game's big talking points, from injuries to opt-outs, figuring how the Trojans will stop star running back Tajay Spears, and so much more. As always, feel free to follow us on social media. We're at Rant of Troy on Twitter and Facebook. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Our email address, rantoftroy@fanside.com. I'm your host, Michael Castillo. You can follow me on Twitter at MichaelCastFS. But of course, I'm joined along with the star of the show, my co-host, Penguin of Troy on Twitter, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. It is the big one, the big episode, one we've looked forward to for a little bit here. Another final game preview of the season. Talking about the Cotton Bowl, USC and Tulane.
It is wild that this is the last game preview of the 2022 season.
Yeah.
I feel like, and we'll say this every year, but especially this year, I feel like it's still September. Like I feel like we haven't gone through a full season. It's wild that it's over already, which is also kind of sad because it's been a lot of fun.
It's a weird kind of thing where in some ways it feels like the season, you know, was a long time ago. And in other ways, it feels like it sort of just happened. So, you know, it happened overnight kind of thing. So, yeah, it's here we are. We are a week from the game. Of course, the game coming up next Monday, January 2nd, which is the federal holiday for New Year's Day, because New Year's Day this year is on Sunday, January 1st. So all of the college games get moved to January 2nd. Of course, this happened 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for the Rose Bowl when SC played Penn State. That was on a Monday, January 2nd as well. So January 2nd, a week from today, 10 a.m. on ESPN, it's going to be the Cotton Bowl Classic. Mark Jones and RG3 on the call. So tune in for that. But yeah, let's just get straight into it. It's the Cotton Bowl, USC and Tulane, the Trojans celebrating their 100th anniversary, the first bowl game in USC history, which was on January 1st, 1923 in the Rose Bowl.
Dang, it's been a while.
Yeah, what was that game like for you?
I wonder what that game was like for me.
If you were there and you're in the chat, let us know. What was it like at the 1923 Rose Bowl? But here we are, the Cotton Bowl Classic, definitely a different venue than the Rose Bowl. It's going to be over at Jerry World in Arlington, Texas. The Cotton Bowl, of course, moved over there about a decade or so ago from the original Cotton Bowl on the east side of Dallas over at the fairgrounds, the Fairplex, as it's called. You and I won't be going there, Alicia. The Trojans have played at Jerry World a few times of late. Of course, the 2016 regular season as a full-time head coach debut for Clay Helton did not go well there against the Alabama Crimson Tide.
That's an understatement.
Losing 50-6. Then there was the Cotton Bowl at the end of the following season, the end of the 2017 season, where SC lost to Ohio State in what was essentially a Rose Bowl that was just moved to Dallas in the Cotton Bowl because the Rose Bowl was a playoff game that year. And so the Cotton Bowl became sort of the de facto Rose Bowl, Pac-12 champion USC against Big Ten champion Ohio State. Future conference foes, of course, with the Trojans going to the Big Ten in 2024. SC loses that game 24-7. We talked about it before. One of the most frustrating games in USC history, at least as far as you and I are concerned. And here they are back at the scene of the crime in another Cotton Bowl, this time against the Group of Five. Can we call them the Group of Five champion? Is that fair?
I think there might be others in the Group of Five who would say it is not fair because they are not.
Yeah.
They are the Group of Five representative.
Yeah. Fresno State, I don't think would feel good about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think there would be arguments certainly because the American is not the only conference in the Group of Five. So
no, just one of five.
Yeah. I mean, one of five. Exactly. So yeah, they're the Group of Five representative. That makes it a very interesting matchup because they have a whole lot to play for.
Yeah,
because all of those Group of Five teams are always looking to pull off a big one. But hey, maybe it was us. It's you and me. Hi, we're the problem. It's you and me. If USC is able to get the win in this game at the Cotton Bowl, because that will mean that USC is undefeated in games at AT&T Stadium that you and I attended. That you and I did not attend.
This is true. You know when the last time SC got a win in a dome stadium?
Syracuse?
No. The Houston Astrodome, 1995.
Was that Syracuse game not played in a dome?
No, it was in at MetLife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then there's a lot of streaks that USC could potentially break here with a win. Like, people think USC has nothing to play for, but we're going to talk about a few things that are historically going against USC in this one. So
I think it's the first time in USC history that the Trojans are playing back to back domed games, having played.
Because they lost it
at Allegiant.
At Allegiant,
which is considered a dome. Yeah.
Oof. Okay. Well, that's another element that I wasn't.
No, there's no elements because it's a dump.
Yeah. Thankfully.
Let's talk about the Tulane Green Wave. Of course, they went 11-2 this season. They won the American, the class of Group of Five, the Group of Five representative in the New Year's Six Bowls. Coached by Willie Fritz in his seventh year at Tulane. All told, as a head coach in college football, he's 196 and 114. He's what I would call a very, very good coach. And Tulane is a very well-coached team. Twice, Fritz took Sam Houston State to the FCS championship game and lost both times to a little school called North Dakota State. I don't know if you ever heard of them in the FCS. Twice, the losers to them. I don't think there's any shame in that. We know how, North Dakota State, practically an FBS school competing at the FCS level.
Yes.
But he goes from, Fritz goes from there up to Tulane. This is his seventh year, and he has turned Tulane around. Tulane, a famously a school who multiple times The administration has considered like getting rid of the football program. They formerly were in the SEC, of course. They have SEC championships under their belt. But they've been, you know, sort of the in-state little brother to LSU for a long time, and the private school in New Orleans that doesn't get the fanfare that LSU does, and, you know, doesn't draw the talent and all that stuff. But Willie Fritz has come in there and turned things around. Bowl games in 4 of 5 seasons, 4 of the last 5. The one that they didn't go was last year. They went 2-10, and they have turned it around completely to go 11-2 this year. Which is pretty incredible for the Tulane Green Wave. Of course, led at quarterback by Michael Pratt. He led the American in passer rating with a passer rating of 159.7. He's a competent rusher, rushed for 395 yards this year. And when you consider Tulane had like 129 lost yards on sacks, basically add like 100 yards more to his rushing total. Because of that, he's already announced he's coming back to the 2023 season as well. So keep an eye on him next year as we go into the seasons. Tulane looks to be another force for the group of five bowl bid in the big bowls. But Tulane is led by their star running back, the American Athletic Conference Offensive Player of the Year, Tajay Spears. 1,376 rushing yards, 15 TDs. He had 242 through the air as a pass catcher, 242 yards, a couple touchdowns there. He really maximized his production as the season went on. He averaged 152 yards per game over the final 7 games of the season. He averaged an insane 7.94 yards per carry over that stretch, topped the 100-yard mark in all 7 of those games, 2 of them against UCF, in which he averaged 10.97 yards per game, including a season-high 199 yards in the AAC championship game. Alicia, when you look at this, he's probably the second best pure running back that SC has faced all year, behind Zach Charbonnet of UCLA. Would that be fair in how you've looked at this game so far?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I saw a quote from a USC defender that called him the best running back that they would face all year. And I don't think that's any disrespect meant to Zach Charbonnet. I think that's a lot of respect paid to Spears and what he's been able to do this season. So he's absolutely the worry guy that you have to look for on this offense. And I think that if you're looking at the way that USC's defense approaches the offenses, it's going to be sort of a tough ask to slow this guy down, but that's what I would do. I would put all of my eggs in preventing Tulane from having their rush attack go off.
Yeah.
And maybe you have to just live with what Michael Pratt does. I maybe take the Notre Dame, the game, the blueprint from that game and say, you know what? Maybe you're going to hurt us a bit, but we also trust that our offense is going to outscore you enough.
I like that.
To accept that Michael Pratt's going to get his and go from there. So it's that's what you do on paper, I think.
Sure, yeah.
Being able to pull it off in actuality is where the challenge comes from. But that's the way that I look at it. You cannot let Spears go off in this game. If you do, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. I think that of all the teams that, you know, I've been struggling to come up with a comp on SC's roster, I mean, schedule this year that feels like Tulane, but, you know, I think you're right. I think Notre Dame is it, in that this is a well-coached team, more so than Notre Dame, and that's not a knock on Freeman. This is a credit to Willie Fritz.
Mm-hmm.
Very well-coached team who is good at just about everything.
Yeah.
They're not elite at anything, but Tajay Spears is a hell of a damn running back, which makes them, you know, you sort of fear their running game more than anything.
Yes.
But even then they're as a team 34th in yards per carry. So it's not like this, they're running at an elite level, like say UCLA was.
the difference between Tulane and Notre Dame, and this is where USC needs to be
there's
very
no
careful.
Michael Mayers.
Well, there's no Michael Mayer, but Michael yeah. Pratt is a much more efficient quarterback in general.
Yes.
Than Drew Pine had been pretty much all season. And Drew Pine, by the time USC got to him, they had sort of settled him down to be more of that efficient, just don't screw up kind of quarterback. But Michael Pratt's been doing that pretty much all year, mm-hmm. and he's tried and true with it. He protects the football pretty well. Only 5 interceptions this year, you know. Top passer rating in the American says that he is doing things really efficiently, which is always helped by having a really strong run game.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that's where, to me, that's where if you're Alex Grinch game planning for this game, you put the pressure on Michael Pratt and see what mm-hmm. happens when the game is all on his shoulders. And you see if he can elevate himself, because my argument is always with quarterbacks, like that's the great defining sort of characteristic of a quarterback is, can they respond when they don't have when they're not able to rely on their run game, when they have pressure in their face, when they're the guy that has to go out and win. And if they do that, then to me, I shrug my shoulders and say, well, that was a great performance by the quarterback. So you live with it.
Yeah. And you know, you look back at the Notre Dame game, all the talk all week was, how was SC going to match the physicality of Notre Dame up front?
Notre Dame was going to run for 400 yards on USC.
Yes.
We were told.
And it was back-to-back games where I think you feel really good about what SC did on the ground defensively. Held Zach Charbonnet 95 yards. Held Notre Dame the 90 as a team. If SC repeats that performance against Tulane, I think they're going to be in a standing to, you know, look really well. The other side of it is that, yeah, Pratt absolutely can, you know, throw the ball all over the field. He loves to distribute the ball pretty evenly to his receivers. The Green Wave have 4 receivers with more than 30 catches, but not a single one with more than 35. Like, I've never seen distribution like this.
This is very Washington State under Mike Leach.
Yes, yes, very. Exactly. Shea Wyatt, 35 catches. Deuce Watts, by the way, Deuce Watts, his name is Deuce. He wears number 2.
As he should.
I would say he's my favorite Watts brother, but his brother also on the team, Fats Watts, and he's a design major. So like, clearly he's my favorite Tulane Green Wave of all time.
Yes.
But Deuce Watts, 31 catches. Jaquan Jackson, 32 catches. Lawrence Keys, III, another great name, 30 catches. So right there, all told, 140 catches, 120, not a math major. See, I'm a design major.
I am not going to help you with that math either, because I'll just embarrass myself.
Yeah, 128 catches between the 4 of them. But yep. Even distribution between all of them for the most part. And then Tyrick James is the tight end to watch for. He's a beefy dude to keep an eye on. But compared to the tight ends that SC has faced this year, he's not Dalton Kincaid, who SC is glad they never have to face ever again. And he's not Michael Mayer. So, you know, you take your chances in trying to shut down the run as best you can and force Pratt to go to those guys. And now the downside of that is SC has been susceptible through the air. Drew Pine threw for 300 yards in that Notre Dame game.
Mm-hmm.
Utah picked SC apart in the passing game multiple times this season. Right? DTR had his success through the air as well. The difference being here, I think if you go in this game as defensively for SC and you're able to stop, you know, Tajay Spears, similarly to what you did against Zach Charbonnet, as good as Pratt is, I think it's just a strong, steady, reliable quarterback. He's not DTR in that he's not going to beat you with his legs in a similar way. Even if he's a competent rusher, I think.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who has, you know, 400 yards under his belt. I don't know that he's going to, you know, be the guy to, you know, pull off all the plays that, say, DTR would. But then again, you look at the guys who have beaten SC on the ground this year. You know, Cam Rising, deceptively quick.
Mm-hmm.
Pratt could be that guy too.
I don't think you need to be DTR to beat this USC defense.
No, you don't.
In fact,
you don't.
DTR beat himself to a certain point because he threw all those interceptions and, right. and had all those turnovers. So if you know, Tulane comes into this, they got to look at Michael Pratt and just say, just don't screw up, dude. Like, yeah. just protect the football, which is really for this offense, something that's going to be a bit of a challenge for them. Pratt has only had 5 interceptions this year, but they have 10 fumbles on the year. So
yeah.
they're not exactly holding on to the ball all that well in terms of that metric. So it'll come down to the skill players not screwing up, and it'll come down to someone like Michael Pratt being stepping up and being ready for the moment. And the challenge that USC has, of course, is to force them into mistakes, force them to be overawed by the occasion, by the yeah. stadium, by all of that, which is certainly a possibility that that Tulane will have to factor in. USC played their last game, you know, at a huge NFL stadium at Allegiant. I don't know. Maybe the AAC plays
they hosted their title game.
Yeah. So I don't know that they have. We know that the program itself has not had this kind of huge matchup in terms of a New Year's Six Bowl for many, 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 many years, if that.
Yeah.
And this is going to be another one where they've got to be able to step up and go onto a stage that's bigger than they've ever been on and show some composure. And like I said, on the flip side, it's USC's job to beat that composure out of them. So that's yeah. the challenge to USC's defense.
Exactly. They have played in a hostile environment this year, Manhattan, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
They went into Manhattan, beat eventual Big 12 champion Kansas State, 14-10. But that is a different kind of
not
environment. That's a hostile environment.
That's a hostile environment.
It's not necessarily the shock and awe environment.
Yeah, AT&T is not going to be hostile, I think. I think it's just, as someone who has walked out onto that field, it is awing.
Yeah, it's not intimidating.
It is awesome in the sense that you walk and you look up and you're just like, wow.
This isn't normal.
I'm inside of a mountain. That's what it feels like to be inside that stadium. Right. It's like, this is what you think about, like the dwarven caverns and stuff in fantasy novels. Like, that's what that feels like. Like, I'm inside of a mountain. So
yeah,
that'll be an interesting sort of wrinkle, but Tulane has the dudes on offense to give USC's defense fits. And if you're looking at the recipe for Tulane to upset USC, it is because USC's defense is as vulnerable as they are.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would go into this hoping to see from USC's defense is a response, because they really screwed up against Utah and they have been getting raked over the coals. Alex Grinch has been getting raked over the coals to the point where Mekhi Blackmon went on Twitter and said, you know,
had to defend him,
he defended the defensive coordinator and he said, you know, Grinch is a great defensive coordinator and basically people on Twitter don't know what they're talking about. Well, if USC's players think that, then they need to show it by coming out and making a statement in this game that represents what they want to be seen as. Because right now, USC's defense is a laughingstock. So this is an offense that, in one sense, is dangerous to USC because they know what they're about. They have competency at quarterback.
Yeah.
They have electricity at running back.
Mm-hmm.
And general reliability elsewhere. On the other hand, this is also an offense that doesn't necessarily, with the exception of Spears, I think that we're like, you know, we talk about DTR and you talk about like guys that really scare the crap out of you.
Yeah.
Dalton Kincaid and, you know, Cam Rising to a point. I think he's just been an exceptional quarterback for Utah for long enough now that you have to look at him and give him that kind of respect. I don't know that Tulane has, like you said, like they're good at everything.
Well, they're 43rd in SP Plus on offense.
So they're just
solidly good.
And they're solid.
Yeah.
So if this is an opportunity for USC's defense to go head to head with a solid offense that isn't going to necessarily blast the doors wide open, but
when your defense is susceptible to that, as he has, you have to still have some concern there.
I think you could still give up 40 points to this offense if you don't tackle.
Exactly. So. We know that that's been SC's problem. Let's turn to the other side of the ball. And to me, this game is all about the other side of the ball. It's all about what USC does on offense against Tulane's defense. Tulane has a very good defense, probably one of the best group of five defenses you're going to find. They're 30th in SP plus. And they are an interesting one. I was going through all the numbers, and it's fascinating to me how this defense works. They do not force negative plays. That sounds bad, but they don't allow big plays. So what does it mean? They just keep everything in front of them. The Waves are 8th in FBS in adjusted defensive yards per play at 4.73 and rank 11th by only allowing 10-plus yard gains on 7.5% of defensive plays. That is good. That is really, really good, right? 8th and 11th in those rankings, good. But you pair that with things like havoc plays, 110th in tackles for loss, 110th in stuff rate, 117th in sack rate. They're not making the negative plays, but they keep everything in front of them that I don't think it matters. And when it all adds up, you know, they go into Manhattan and they keep Kansas State to 4.6 yards per play, the fewest that K-State had all season. Only 10 points K-State scored in that game. The fewest they scored all season. So this is the defense that, you know, has a bunch of, you know, all-conference players led by Dorian Williams and Nick Anderson, a two-headed linebacker core in a 4-2-5 defense, where if the two in the 4-2-5 are your best two players on defense, I think you got to feel really good about how that defense works from the middle out. And they've got a lot of talent there. And of course, the big key is what happens for USC on offense. Caleb Williams at quarterback gets hurt in the Pac-12 championship game, comes up lame on his hammy, stays in the entire game, and SC struggles. Andrew Voorhees missed that game in the Pac-12 championship game, and SC could not run the ball. Brett Nealon got hurt in that game, had to leave. Nealon is not playing in the Cotton Bowl. Voorhees is not playing in the Cotton Bowl. Biletnikoff winner from last year, Jordan Addison, is not playing in the Cotton Bowl. Caleb Williams says he's playing in the Cotton Bowl, but like, what does that mean? Is he going to be 100%? I wouldn't bet on it. We don't exactly know how he's going to look in this game. I have a lot of questions about USC's offense.
I have a weird confidence about USC's offense if Caleb Williams plays. My concern about USC's offense is if Caleb Williams does not play, because what we learned about the Lincoln Riley offense when Caleb Williams got hurt is not necessarily that without Caleb Williams, USC's offense is nothing. I don't think that's the case, because Lincoln Riley's offenses have been consistently good for too long to say that it's just Caleb Williams. What we learned is that having a mobile quarterback, a running threat at quarterback, is the key to this offense. And when Caleb Williams ceased to be a running threat, the offense basically had nothing. And the problem for USC is that, as we were, you know, watching at home, watching that game, saying Caleb is a detriment right now, get him out, put Miller Moss in. You put Miller Moss in, you don't solve that problem. Miller Moss does not have the running ability that Caleb Williams does. Miller Moss is not a quarterback who's going to do a zone read and then keep it himself and gain a lot of yards and sort of be confident doing that. So if Miller Moss is the starter, then USC is going to have to go with a more conventional looking offense. And I don't know what that looks like for Lincoln Riley at USC. And I certainly don't know what that looks like for Lincoln Riley at USC with the offensive line composed the way that it's going to be composed, because we've never seen the offensive line composed the way that it's going to be composed.
Right.
And it seems now that we have some clarity, because Gino Quinones has talked to the media, and he has confirmed that he has been taking first team reps at left guard. And so we can sort of piece together the offensive line as Bobby Haskins at left tackle, Gino Quinones at left guard in place of Andrew Voorhees, Justin Dedich at center, Jonah Monheim at right guard, and Mason Murphy at right tackle. And you can sort of look at that and say, okay, I think a month of preparation for those guys to get ready to go is possible to have things go all right in this. But we also saw what happened against Utah when USC had to shuffle that line and had no Andrew Voorhees, and it was an absolute disaster. And they had nothing. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't take pressure off of Caleb Williams, and he was a sitting duck as soon as his hamstring went. So
yeah.
Does USC's offense without Caleb Williams as a running threat, even if he is present, if he's not a running threat, then it's, there's another question. Can they go toe-to-toe with this Tulane defense with that offensive line? Can they run the ball against Tulane's defense with that offensive line? Can they protect Miller Moss, who will need more protection than Caleb Williams does, with that offensive line?
And we always know that the protection was the part of the liability.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. And I think that's what makes this side of the matchup so intriguing, because you can almost imagine a scenario like the Kansas State game where this really good offense, this really exciting offense with a good quarterback and good skill position players and stuff, where they're just stopped in their tracks because Tulane is very well coached and disciplined, and they have some good players on that defense, talented players who are able to shut things down. You could also imagine a world where USC has way more firepower than even Kansas State had. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about Adrian Martinez versus a healthy Caleb Williams, you are not talking about the same stratosphere of quarterback. And maybe that's the thing that that separates these the scenario where you look at it and go, well, Tulane hasn't faced the Lincoln Riley offense, so good luck, folks.
Well, they have. They did last year.
Well,
week one.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be an interesting thing. I wish we had, like I said, I wish we had time. We literally had a month. I guess we could have gone back and watched the Tulane game from last year. Tulane in Oklahoma, week one. Lincoln Riley Sooners win that game 40-35. But who's at quarterback for Oklahoma?
It's Spencer Rattler.
It's Spencer Rattler, someone who is not of the same mobility that Caleb Williams is.
Certainly not the same caliber.
No, not at all. Not in that category. He's on the Miller Moss to Caleb Williams scale. He's closer to Miller Moss. Still between those guys, but still closer to Miller Moss in that sense. And so I how much of that plays into it? I don't know. But like, I go back to the conference championship game, and I think SC could have won the game with a gimpy Caleb Williams. I think SC could have won the game without Andrew Voorhees. And they could have won the game in the game in which they didn't run the ball at all, like successfully. They couldn't do all three of those things together.
Yeah.
And I think all three of those things, obviously the Caleb Williams injury happens on a scramble. And, you know, I'm not going to say that was a direct cause of the Andrew Voorhees injury. But sure, I guess you could say he's not making that scramble if there's better protection, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go.
That was a Heisman level impressive
exactly.
play.
Like he was going to, you know, scramble at some point anyway.
He won the Heisman on that play.
Because of his heroic efforts.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go that far. But what I'm going to say is, like, I think that if Vander Voorhees is in that game, I think that despite, we talked about it all year long, SC is an elite running team on a per play basis. All the numbers check out. We talked about opportunity rate, how far SC is ahead of everybody else in the country in opportunity rate, and at making sure that the offensive line is giving the running backs their best opportunity to run the football. Well, when Andrew Voorhees is not in there, all of that came crumbling down, and it showed how valuable Andrew Voorhees was to this team just as much as Caleb Williams is. And so without him in there, I have so many questions. And you look at an offensive line for the Trojans, which is going to have Bobby Haskins at left tackle, presumably Gino Quinones at left guard. Justin Dietich moves over to center. Jonah Monheim at right guard, Mason Murphy at right tackle. The right side of the line has a little bit more stability than it has before, but you still have Justin Dietich moving from right guard to center. you have those guys moving around, and maybe they can build some chemistry over 3 weeks of bowl prep. But this is not the offensive line that SC built up all those great rushing metrics with. And so I really wonder, like, can they be able to run the ball well? I just don't know. They need to prove it to me.
The plus side is that this Tulane rush defense is not, they're absolutely not bad. They're pretty decent, in fact, but they're not great.
No.
And that may be like
109th in defensive opportunity rate.
Yeah. So they have been vulnerable at times. They're not giving up. Like, I'm just looking at their stats. The season high that they've given up is 235 yards rushing to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
If that's your, sorry, the season high was 336 to UCF. My bad. But like, if the vast majority of your games this season, you give up one game of 300 yards, you give up one game of 200 yards, and the rest of your games are sort of somewhere in between 175 and 115 in terms of just rushing yards that are achieved,
mm-hmm.
you're pretty consistently doing okay on that front. Right. You're not getting like gashed, which again is the kind of thing where with this Tulane team, why they've been so good is because they're just consistently fine. Like they're good,
right.
But not necessarily great. Like they're not holding anybody. They held Southern Miss to 59 yards, but it's Southern Miss. But like Kansas State had 186 yards against them. Deuce Vaughn is a good running back. So like, I'd take that if I'm Tulane going up against that running back.
Well, part of it is there, you know, you look at Tulane's defense and how it's set up in that 4-2-5. They really defend the pass really, really well. And for, you know, long stretches of the season, they were up among the highest ranked pass defenses. They finished the year 18th in total pass defense, 19th in passer rating. Which I think is going to be a challenge for SC, but if SC is at their full health, it's still Caleb Williams and most of his weapons at wide right. receiver. And I think you still pick SC in that bet there.
Yes, but it's a lot easier for Tulane to defend the pass if they're not
having to worry about
what Austin Jones or Malik Brown does.
Exactly.
And that's why
Utah was able to completely shut down SC when Caleb Williams was gimpy, because he couldn't scramble and he couldn't hand off.
And
they weren't able to run the ball and they became extremely one dimensional. I mean, and that's why they couldn't complete a third down.
Calling that offense once Caleb Williams got injured one dimensional is being very generous.
It was like half a dimension.
They were half dimensional.
Yes.
Yeah. So like you would hope that's not the case in this game. Even if it's not Caleb Williams, the plus side is, if Caleb Williams is not playing or if he's limited, they will have had a month to game plan for Miller Moss playing and for Caleb Williams being injured. Right. Where I think part of the problem against Utah was just it's happened. And what do you do then? Like you're sort of screwed. And you also have a situation where you can't run the ball because you've got all the other stuff that you're talking about. But you go into this game and you look at it and you think, well, if you can establish a run game, take some of the load off of the quarterback, be it Caleb Williams or Miller Moss, you give yourself that much more of an opportunity. And there is an opportunity there to run the ball effectively against this Tulane team.
Right.
But how effectively can you,
with
this offensive line, we do not know how effectively USC can run the ball.
Right.
This will be a huge, huge test for the coaching staff, for Josh Henson to get Quinones and those guys all, and Dietrich especially, because I know he is a center by trade, but he has not played center in 2-3 years. So that is something that he's going to have to get up with. And the task that they have in front of them is pretty huge. But part of me also wants to give them the benefit of the doubt, because we did see with the exception of that Utah game where the stuff hit the fan in multiple different dimensions of that game.
Yeah.
We've seen the offensive line do its job and do it well, and we saw the offensive line have to adjust to injuries early in the season. You know, Bobby Haskins and Cortland Ford were in and out. Mason Murphy is only playing because of the injuries that were happening over at that left tackle spot. And it worked out in the end, because now when we're looking at that offensive line, we're only looking at Gino Quinones as the big question of like, well, He's only started one game this season. He started against Arizona, I think. And we don't know what to expect from him. But like Mason Murphy was in that position in week three, in week four, you know? Right. So he's now had a season under his belt to make us feel a little bit more certain about what you're getting with him. But he also needs, Mason Murphy and Jonah Monheim also need to step up, because their performance against Utah was not up to snuff. Nobody on that offensive line was. So
yeah. And you know, you say that the offensive line has, you know, answered the bell time and time again this year, and they have, absolutely. But every time they have, Andrew Voorhees has been there.
Yeah.
And well, so and this is why they, and the one time that they didn't, he wasn't there. So it's very easy to say that, well, if he's not in there, then they can't.
Well, and Brett Nealon was there too.
Yeah, and that, yeah, Brett Nealon was there for most of that game. He got hurt, you know, in the second half. So
yeah.
And without those two guys, Nealon was a Remington Award finalist.
Yeah.
One of the top three centers in the country. So, yeah. And Voorhees, of course, an All-American. So yeah, it's difficult.
It's a challenge.
It's absolutely a challenge. SC's got to deal with the injuries and slash opt-outs. Even though there really haven't been opt-outs, I guess you can call Jordan Addison an opt-out, even though he does say that he's rehabbing the injury. So I don't know. You put that all together, the other hurdle to climb for the SC in this game is the curse. The curse.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia, no Pac-12 championship game runner-up, loser, whatever you want to call it, has ever won a bowl game.
Yeah.
They are 0-10.
Yeah.
Since the Pac-12 expanded the conference expanded and got a Pac-12 championship game, the first time in 2011, there have been 12 Pac-12 championship games, 11 before this season, and those 11 losers went 0-10 in bowl games. One of them did not play a bowl game, and that was 2020 USC, of course, which lost the Pac-12 championship game and then did not go to a bowl game in the COVID season. So rightfully, we can just scratch the COVID season off of this one.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but
0-10. And it's not only 0-10. Those teams have been outscored by an average of 14 points per game.
A lot of blowouts in there.
There are a lot of blowouts. UCLA lost to Baylor by 23. Utah lost to Texas in 2019, 38-10. Colorado in 2016 lost to Oklahoma State in the Alamo Bowl, 38-8. So there's close games in there too, but like they're sort of weighed down by those big blowouts. And why does this exist? Well, most of this, the bulk of these years have come in the playoff era. And when the Rose Bowl is no longer in your line of sight in the playoff era, the bowl games tend to sort of just be an anomaly. Not an anomaly. What's the word?
A crapshoot.
You know, less important.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely not an anomaly. I know what anomaly means. But you know, a little bit less important, right? I think it does matter that of all these games, only one of them has been in a January 6th bowl. And that is Arizona losing to Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
They lost 38-30. That's a respectable game against a good Boise State team. That's one game, small sample size. That's the situation SC is in. But I would also say SC's in a spot where if I was on the outside and doing bowl pick'em, I would absolutely be picking Tulane here straight up, because you got the Heisman winner coming back after an injury. You've got the two guys in the offensive line not playing, all those things. While Tulane, this is absolutely their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like all the things are right there to, given how bowl games work lately, to say that this is Tulane's bowl game to win.
Yeah, I think you can certainly look at the 0-10 record for runners up in the Pac-12 as being a reflection of the disappointment of being the runner up in your conference. And I think it would be interesting to look at the record for like the other Power Five conference, for any of the other conferences to see what they do. But just knowing the Pac-12 footprint a little bit better, the majority of these games have come in the Holiday Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, and there's one Craft Fight Hunger Bowl. But I think for the most part, Alamo and Holiday.
To be fair, UCLA in 2011 shouldn't have been in that championship game. So.
Well, and that's what Texas Mike points out. Didn't we establish the second best team in the Pac-12 usually wasn't in the Pac-12 title game? That's a fair thing, too, because
of
the divisions. And that's also partly why, like, the second, you know, the loser goes to the Holiday Bowl as opposed to something sort of bigger. And this is the first time that we have had USC be the runner-up or be the have a second place team that wasn't a division winner. That was a,
even though ironically the Pac-12 would have been better off if it was Washington as the division winner, because it would have been a game win which SC and Washington didn't play all season.
Yeah,
so
that would have been fun.
Yeah, not taking anything away from Utah, obviously.
No. But it just sort of the top two teams in the Pac-12 by record.
Yeah,
played in this game, which is not always the case with the North and South for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe it's disappointment. Maybe it's all of those things. But that's why I think this is such a big test for me, for USC in this game. How much can USC's coaching staff motivate this group? Because
yes,
they need to motivate this group, because this group is, by and large, the group that's going to go back next year and try to do it all over again. So you gotta motivate this group. You gotta get them wanting to go out there and put their best on the field. And if they put their best on the field, they'll win.
Yeah.
The problem is that, like, it's hard to get up for a game, you know, on January 10 a.m. Pacific against Tulane, when there's going to be, you know, 20 fans in the stands. And
no, Alicia, there's gonna be more than that. Remember the OU fans are,
oh yeah, the OU fans are going to be there. That's the hostile environment. So I don't know. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult job to get guys up for this game. But I just, this is why I keep wanting to feel like Caleb Williams is going to play.
Yeah.
And to be frank, like, I'll believe that Caleb Williams is going to play when the line starts to move, because right now the line, last I saw, it was USC by 2.
Yeah, 1.5 when I did the rundown earlier today.
That line will move if anyone thinks that Caleb Williams is actually going to play in this game, you'll see that line move. With it being at 2, makes me think.
So,
this is me reading a lot into lines, but that's just me.
Lincoln Riley has said that the only people he expects not to play were Voorhees, Nealon, and Addison, and that everyone else he expects to play, including Caleb Williams. But we know there's gamesmanship in college football with the quarterback stuff. And again, we go back to how healthy could he be? And could it be a thing where you can still expect him to play a week ago, and then you get to the game and then decide otherwise too? Like, I'm skeptical like you are. We'll see. But how all of this stuff goes in, this is just SC with the injuries, Tulane feeling like this is their best season in decades, going to the biggest bowl game in like 60 years. This has all the especially when, you know, look at how SC fans were just completely broken. Like, the spirit was broken after the Pac-12 championship game, because of how much of a heartbreaking loss that was, looking at the playoff and all that stuff. I think you're right that SC needs to find a way to pick up the pieces and rally on that and end the season with the bang looking into next year. I just don't know how realistic that always is, given how we see bowl games now. So I don't know, but we have over under to get to, Alicia, and it's the last over under of the season. So double points. Let's get to it.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Lisa, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash. Because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today. Use the code RANOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going to do an under here.
I have a lead. 47 over-under wins. You're at 41. That's 6 over-under games for me that I have to lead, but this is double. So it's basically 3. You need 3 things to go your way. What's your first over-under?
All right. I'm going 6.5 catches for Mario Williams. With Jordan Addison out, Mario Williams is going to be as healthy as he's been in a while, given the time that he's had to recover from the injury he had earlier in the season. This could be his day. This could be the day for Mario Williams to take over that number one receiving slot, especially because we know Dorian Singer's coming in.
Yeah.
We know that there will be five-star freshman coming in. If Mario Williams wants that number one job, like he's gotta act like a number one receiver. And so I'm curious what he'll do in this game. 6.5 catches because his season high was 6 earlier this season. He's only had one other game with more than 4. Only had one game with 100 yards. He had 145 against Utah before.
Yeah.
In the first game against Utah. So yeah, will he Will he go off? Will Mario Williams go off?
I'm going to take the under. I like Mario Williams to be a low catch, high yard guy. And not low catch, but just more so like he's going to be high on the average. He's going to be like the deep threat guy who's going to, you know, get a whole bunch of yak yards and deep ball yards. So give me like 6 catches for 100, but under the 6.5.
Okay.
My first over under, of course, these are double points, is similar. 7.5 over under, 7.5 Relique Brown touches. He had 8 plus touches in only 2 games this season, 9 against Rice, 8 against Colorado, but they were his best 2 games of the year. Can he do it again? 7.5 Relique Brown touches over under.
So he didn't have a run against Utah. He had 2 catches against Utah. I'm going to take the over. I think we'll see him involved in the run game. I just have a feeling. I just have a little bit of a feeling.
All right.
But we'll
see. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it goes because he and Austin Jones surely are going to be the guys in the backfield.
Yeah.
But how much will it be Austin Jones? I think Brown could be a pass catching option, especially if you got to go to the flats. And then again, that's just something I'd do.
In the context of this game, too, you're at the end of the season. It's your last game, really Brown of his freshman season.
Yeah.
Now, like you really want to see what a full involvement in this offense, especially because you don't have Travis Dye. He's the number 2 running back at this point. Let him loose. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I agree. Over under. Your next one. I almost read it off the rundown. That would have been bad. What's your next one?
Over under 1.5 turnovers forced by USC. So USC's defense ended up averaging 2.07 turnovers per game.
Mm-hmm.
Tulane's offense averaged 1.15 turnover per game. They had 10 fumbles and 5 interceptions. So it's the end of the season. Everyone talked about how USC couldn't maintain the turnovers, and more or less they did a decent job of it. But also, I think it came back to bite them against Utah because I think they were so focused on forcing a turnover that they were missing tackles. So can they force some fumbles in this one? Can they get multiple turnovers in this game?
Yeah, SC's done it a bunch. Obviously, they've done it like 7 different games this year, forced more than 1.5. Tulane, though, is someone who just keeps it close to the vest. I sort of like Tulane to continue to do that, so give me the under.
Okay. When you're the under, that means I take the over.
Yeah, Pratt only 5 picks. So yeah. Neither team this year throws picks.
Yeah.
My next one is over under 45.5% on third down for the Trojans. And the Trojans were 4th nationally, 51.6 during the season. There were 1 for 12 against Utah, which was really bad. Of course, there were the circumstances we talked about. Tulane, very good defensively. 34.8% is pretty solid, but their best 2 performances on third down were in their 2 biggest games, K-State and UCF. K-State went 2 for 15 on third down, so 45.5% on third down over under that.
UCF went 6 for 23.
6 for 23. That is, can you imagine having 23 third downs?
23 third downs and you converted 6 of them. That is just, I would not want to be a UCF fan watching that game, to be quite honest.
No.
I'm going to take the under. And I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know why. I don't have a strong urge to say over. My brain just said take the under, so I'm taking it.
4 of 11 is 44%. Sorry, 4 of 11 is 45%.
See, I think USC can. I think USC can win the game without having, with being under 45% on third down conversions.
Yeah, I think if they go like 4 for 11, for example, I think
just
that would probably be.
Don't have third downs.
Yeah. Okay, so you take the under there, locks me into the over. What is your last over under?
All right, 2.5 tackles for loss for Tuli Tupelotu. He had 21 tackles for loss on the season, but he only had 1 each in the last 2 games of the season against Notre Dame and Utah. He only had one sack in the last three games, if you include UCLA in that. Mm-hmm. So he's sort of, I think teams have understood that he's the focal point. Just, you know, double team him. Don't let him go off. Will Tulane be able to do that? I guess is my question. Tulane has allowed 61 tackles for loss. They're giving up 4+ tackles for loss per game. So Tulane tends to be either sort of a 1-0 or a 4. So
I'm gonna go risky here. Give me the over. Okay. I like Tulane for a big one here. Also, I'm proposing to change his name to Tulane Tifilpilotu.
Tifilpilotu. I like it.
For the tackle for loss.
Tifilpilotu. Yes. Yeah. Tulane had a third of the number of tackles for loss that Tulane had this season, that Tulane gave up this season.
There you go. He's due. My last one for you is over under 129.5 Tajay Spears rushing yards. Again, as I mentioned earlier, 7 straight 100-yard games, and he was over 130 in 5 of the 7. 199 against UCF in the AAC title game. We know SC allowed 223 total rushing yards to Utah, but only 90 to Notre Dame. They held Zach Charbonnet to 95. So 129.5. Tajay Spears. Over under.
I don't even know.
Averaging $150 over the last 7.
Do I want to bet on USC wrapping up and tackling Tajay Spears? This is a little bit of a question. I'm going to go with the over.
Okay. All right.
And I might regret that because I have a little voice in my head that's saying, take the under. And I listened to it before, but also
It's a difficult line, I think, because he could have a great game and still have $125.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not sure about this one. I don't know. All right. Before we get into our game predictions, I just want to remember to make your picks. We're going to throw the link in here so you can go make your picks for over under, because it's the last week. And Moose Pants and Ryan from Arizona lead with 55 over under wins. Behind them is Stephen Chad at 54. Carrie from Chicago has 53. Cali Cat, Jay Vandy, or Buddy Steve from the Bay Area, Randy from Redlands have 52. LA Fred and Ocean Beach Trojans at 51. And 28 Pitch, Cali Matt, and G Young 08 at 50. All in the game. Double or nothing. Well, not double or nothing, but double the points.
Yeah.
So go make your points. Alicia, let's get into game predictions. Vegas is the Trojans as of today, Monday, a 1.5-point favorite. The over-under is at 62.5. What is your prediction?
I am going USC 38, Tulane 35.
Okay. Close one.
I think it'll be close. I'm betting on Lincoln Riley's offense. That's just what I'm doing.
I can't bet against 0-10. I want to think that SC can go in this game and, you know, have Caleb Williams back and the makeshift offensive line and still beat a team that they're more talented than. But I think Tulane is going to, I hate the want it more thing, but I think when you talk about bowl games, I think that is a thing. You talk about the 0-10-ness, 0-10 streak. I think that's worrisome for the Pac-12 championship losers, especially when you talk about the offensive line and we don't know Caleb Williams, you know, health percentage and all that. Give me Tulane 34, SC 28. So not a blowout, but close. But yeah. No cigar for
SC. Is your prediction that Miller Moss will be the quarterback for that 28 points?
I don't know. I genuinely
because I almost put in two different score predictions with Caleb Williams and without, but I decided not to.
I think Caleb plays, but but is visibly not ready.
Limited.
I think that would be my hunch, if anything. So, all right. Let's really quick run down the news roundup before we wrap up this episode. Really quick transfer portal updates. USC linebacker Tua Sivinamora has entered the portal. He will not be at the Cotton Bowl. There's another guy who just won't be there. Western Michigan defensive lineman Braden Fiske had the opportunity to pick USC, but he committed to Florida State. Tulsa offensive tackle Dylan Wade commits to Auburn, not USC. The Trojans have offered Texas State defensive lineman Devon Sears and Washington State offensive lineman Jarrett Kingston. So keep an eye out for those two guys.
Still pursuing defensive and offensive linemen, and the rest of the year should be all about those in the transfer portal.
Yeah, all the big bodies there. In the quarterback news, Keaton Slovis going to the site of his first loss, BYU.
I had forgotten about that.
Yes. DJ following his brother to Oregon, but he's going to Oregon State, the Beavs, to be their quarterback from Clemson.
This one's interesting. This could be the thing that wins Oregon State the Pac-12, or this could be the wrong quarterback for them to have picked up. And I am in the camp of this isn't the fit I would have given them. They have everything except a quarterback.
Yeah.
I would have, if I were them, I would have looked for the efficient, strong decision-making productivity of a G5 or FCS sort of transfer, looking to plug and play, versus DJ Uiagalelei, who I really think's like needs a full rehab from Clemson. Like the Clemson offense just it did not click with him. He did not look good running that offense. I don't know if Oregon State has a better does Oregon State's running game being their focal point help, or does this ruin everything for Oregon State because now they go in and go, oh, we got DJU, he's a 5-star, let's let him air it out, and then that becomes a mistake. I don't know. This is so intriguing. But then again, I thought Bo Nix wouldn't do anything at Oregon, and he did a hell of a job at Oregon. So who knows?
I'm with you. I think that Oregon State needed somebody who was ready to go, a turnkey. And DJ is a reclamation project. But at the same time, Jonathan Smith, hard to go against him. And he's been called a quarterback guru before.
And when you give him a quarterback with an arm, if nothing else, DJ Uiagalelei has an arm that can air it out.
The other quarterbacks didn't. It was weird. Yeah. They had to make their handoffs with their knees. Very difficult. So other news, some USC staffers are getting jobs. USC lead defensive analyst Austin Woods is expected to be the new O-line coach at Incarnate Word over the FCS. They just were in the playoffs, made a playoff run there in San Antonio. Associate Director of Football Sports Performance, Brian Keegans, is reportedly hired by North Texas, the new strength coach. And Texas A&M is reportedly considering USC wide receivers coach Luke Heuert as its next offensive coordinator, according to Brent Swennerman of the Houston Chronicle.
See, that one's fascinating.
It's weird because
Luke Heuert was an analyst that got promoted into the job because Dave Nichols tragically died. And I find it interesting that he's the one that's getting an offensive coordinator nod at Texas A&M, at least being looked at.
If I'm an Aggie, I hate that move.
Like, that's the best they can do?
And it's not a knock on Heuert,
But no.
The whole thing is that Jimbo needs to go out and get a name. They need to go out and get Cliff Kingsbury before Nick Saban does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. I mean, and I get it if you want sort of someone from the Lincoln Riley tree who's...
Yeah. Right.
But there's got to be someone more established for Texas A&M to go get. Like, there's got to be someone with more...
Yeah. They've got all the oil.
Cachet. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just not the... If you had told me one of USC's assistants would get poached for an offensive coordinator position, Heward would not have been the one that I would have guessed for Texas A&M. But we'll see if that, well, it's a report, so we don't know if it's going to happen, but that'll be interesting.
If that happens, that tells me that Jimbo still doesn't want to give up power.
That's what my thinking would be.
All right. Really quick mailbag. We got a couple of questions to get to here on YouTube. Ron Murdy says, has SC used most of the practices they have available to them? That's been my understanding. Not like they took extra weeks off or anything like that.
No, they've been practicing for this would be their third week of practice.
Yeah, I guess 3 weeks of practice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sort of goes along with what the timeline you would expect. Yeah.
Bless and Break says, man, I'm starting to wonder why we paid Lincoln $110 million if we can't even land Dylan Wade or Braden Fiske. WTF are we doing? Everyone knows the game is won in the trenches.
As someone in the chat said, you paid Lincoln Riley $11 million a year to come in and win 11 games, which he did, and to come in and produce USC's eighth Heisman winner, which he did. And yeah, you're going to win some and you're going to lose some.
Yeah.
And yes, I want USC to be winning the battles for these offensive tackles and defensive linemen. Absolutely. You need to go out there and do it. But you're throwing a ginormous baby out with the bathwater if you're acting like this is not, like, Lincoln Riley is suddenly not worth his salary because of Dylan Wade, the Tulsa offensive tackle. Like, nah.
Yeah. As West Texas might says, why can't we just win a game?
Yeah. It's been so long.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. The Cotton Bowl will come up next week, 10 a.m. Pacific on I think it's ESPN, not ABC.
Yeah.
With Mark Jones and Heisman Trophy winning quarterback RG3.
So get your breakfast
calling
burritos
this year's
ready.
Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams, against the Tulane Green Wave. We will be back on Thursday with an episode, which I don't know what we're going to talk about. A whole bunch of mailbag questions, maybe. Send us your mailbag questions. RainofTroy@fanside.com is the email address. We're just going to hang out, talk about the Cotton Bowl a little bit more, answer your questions, just have a little fun on Thursday. So join us then Thursday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live on YouTube, as always. And if you're here on YouTube, be sure to like the stream and subscribe. We hope you all have a wonderful holiday season and continue to do so with New Year's coming up. We appreciate you guys as always. It's been a hell of a year. And I don't know about you, Alicia, but the game preview episodes are my favorite to do, and all the research and all that. So this was fun to put together. Can't wait till the next one. But one final game left. We'll be back Thursday before the CarCast Monday night. So until then, we will see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's one.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.